Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington, D.C.
The Catholic Church, as you know, in the Democratic Republic of Congo is a very powerful institution, mainly because this is a church who is in touch with the grassroots, and so they know what is happening in the grassroots.
Religious groups in the Democratic Republic of Congo, or DRC, demand an independent inquiry into allegations of voter fraud in the December general election.
The President of the Republic of Kenya is on record as making two statements which we have taken great exception to. The first statement is that he will not obey court orders, which for us is a recipe for chaos and anarchy.
The Law Society of Kenya calls on its members to embark on a strike next week in solidarity with the judiciary.
The Constitution makes it very clear that members who are serving an active service in either the civil service or the local government service cannot participate fully in political party activity.
And a Ghanaian civil society group calls for the resignation or firing of the Controller and Accountant General over his decision to engage in political activities. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. The powerful Catholic Bishops' Conference and Protestant churches in the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC, have in a joint statement demanded an independent inquiry be opened into irregularities and alleged legal violations observed during December general election. The presidential election won by incumbent President Felix Tshisekedi has been met with controversy. Two formal appeals against the provisional presidential results have been filed before Congo's Constitutional Court, which must assess them ahead of a January 12 deadline to announce the final results. Mulengwa Zuhindura, the president of the Center for Political and Strategic Studies in the DRC and a former spokesperson for President Joseph Kabila, tells my colleague Douglas Impuga that the Catholic Church is a powerful institution whose demands should be taken seriously.
You know, the Catholic Church, as you know, in the Democratic Republic of Congo is a very powerful institution, mainly because this is a church who is in touch with the grassroots. And so they know what is happening at the grassroots, and they have done a detailed work with these elections. And not only with this, but, you know, the past elections have been very involved, making sure that the process was fair and the process was transparent. So the work they've done again this year has been very, very transparent and very good work. And they've been able to point out a lot of irregularities. And they're worried that this could lead to a much wider conflict in the Democratic Republic of Congo. So their statement is right on the money.
So do you think, in your opinion, CENI or the government will heed this demand by the churches?
I don't know if they'll do that, but it's in the best interest to do that because if they are talking about a democratic process, and from all indication, this process was not democratic. This was a process that was flawed, and this election should never have been held. I don't think the Electoral Commission was ready for these elections. And the government should have given the Electoral Commission more time. They could have asked the government to give them an extra 3 months to organize the election, but they chose not to do that. You know, I don't know whether they will heed what the Catholic Church and other bishops and the Protestant churches in the Democratic Republic of Congo are calling for, but they do have an interest to do that to avoid a wider conflict across the country.
In addition to the church, Catholic Church and the other churches, there have been two formal appeals against the provisional presidential results, which have been filed before Congo's Constitutional Court. Do you have confidence in the court to resolve this?
As an attorney myself, I would say yes. But we know that the court in the Democratic Republic of Congo is partisan, and it always sides with whomever is in power. So I don't believe the Constitutional Court will do the right thing. They will absolutely not do the right thing. I don't believe that will happen. But, you know, what I wanted to say is that the big problem here, you know, the result, the provisional results of the presidential elections have already been announced. But the government is failing to even announce what happened with the legislative elections, which were held at the same time, and the law calls for both of those results to be announced at the same time. So again, that goes to reinforce what the Catholic Church and other churches are saying, that there have been irregularities.
Briefly, what do you think will happen, in your opinion, even between the church's demand and the appeals to the court?
What I would like to see more is probably what I could say. I don't know what's going to happen, but I know what I would like to see is for the government today to heed the call for the Catholic Church to bring a more transparent process in place. What I would like to see is for these elections to be annulled, because these were not fair and free elections, not anywhere close to it, to be annulled and to have a new set of elections reorganized, a more free and transparent. Otherwise, we are going to have a fight on our hands. There's already all kinds of rebellions across the country. And what Congo needs right now is peace. And the elections, the way they were held, they are not going to bring peace to the country.
Mulengwa Zihindura is the president of the Center for Political and Strategic Studies in DRC and a former spokesperson for President Joseph Kabila. He spoke with my colleague Douglas Impuga, still in the Democratic Republic of Congo. A political analyst says expectations are high that President Felix Tshisekedi will keep his campaign promises, including improving security in the country's troubled regions. Dede Wachiba says the re-elected president also needs to create jobs for the country's youth and improve the economy. His remarks come amid a demand for an independent inquiry into the election after leading opposition leaders rejected the outcome of the presidential contest. The Electoral Commission, known as CNE, declared the incumbent president winner after garnering about 73% of the total vote cast. For analysis and expectations, I reach Dede Wachiba.
My main expectation that our political system to be threatened. After this election, we have to strengthen our system must progress, and we have to organize the fair elections, and the winner must be in French to be proclaimed. The real person who win, the winner must be the president.
I know you have also spoken with some people in your community, especially in Kinshasa. What are they expecting the president to do?
Their expectation is about the improvement of their social situation. You know, you have to improve health system. You have to create jobs, because the poverty is so, the people are so poor here. So for us, that we need food, we need water, we need electricity, and maybe for the eastern part of Congo, we need the most thing they are waiting for is the peace, is the security.
Talking about the peace and security, do you think most Congolese have confidence that a president will try to bring peace in the eastern part of the country, especially when he said that he has done well and that he will do more if he's re-elected?
Well, that is a big issue. So for me, if according to the fact that the president was elected, so they are confident that he can change things. But for me, as a political analyst, I think that we cannot change things with the old strategy, the old means. We need just to make that the real analysis to try what works, what doesn't work in the old system, and try to make better, to change things. We cannot change things with the old system, which is not working, you know what I'm saying. I give you an example. The problem for me, we need to change the quality of our army or our security system, not the quantity. We are just to recruit people without suitable training. No, that's what we need to make this kind of analysis to know the fundamental cause, the reason of this instability, and try to respond to this cause, to this reason by rational means. And rational means can be that for me. I don't know. Negotiation can go to strengthen our army. the security, to motivate this army, the policemen. And so it's not too easy to do that. So they need a rational way to approach this issue.
Dede Wachiba is a political analyst in the Democratic Republic of Congo, DRC. He spoke with me from the capital, Kinshasa. The Law Society of Kenya is calling on its members to embark on a nationwide strike next week in solidarity with the judiciary. This after President William Ruto came under criticism following his allegations that some judges have teamed up with the opposition to thwart administration projects. The president was quoted as saying he plans to root out those he says are involved in undermining his administration using the court system. But Eric Theory, president of the Law Society, says the organization is challenging him to provide evidence to support his allegations of corruption in the judiciary. Some analysts say the president appears to be frustrated with the courts following rulings that have gone against his administration. For more on the call for a nationwide strike, I reached Law Society of Kenya President Eric Theory.
The president of the Republic of Kenya is on record as making two statements which we have taken great exception to. The first statement is that he will not obey court orders, which for us is a recipe for chaos and anarchy, and heralds a return of an autocratic president that seems or seeks to elevate himself above the operation of the law and the constitution, and we deem that as a declaration of a constitutional coup on the constitutional order that the Kenyans gave themselves upon the promulgation of the new constitution. The second is the mention by the president, without giving specific details, that the judiciary is corrupt. We take exceptions to this statement for two very important reasons. That first, under the Constitution, there's a very clear and well-laid-out procedure for anyone to make a complaint whenever they have allegations against a particular judicial officer. And in this particular case, the president, in his remarks, has failed to exploit or to utilize these procedures and has proceeded to make unsubstantiated, wild allegations touching on the entire judiciary without naming the specific judges.
Now, Mr. Theory, yes. Some people are suggesting that instead of embarking on this protest by lawyers across the country, why would the Law Society and not engage the president, you know, to help resolve some of these deep concerns you have, rather than embarking on this strike, which they said might affect, you know, the day-to-day running of courts across the country?
It will not affect the day-to-day running of courts within the country. It is not a boycott of the courts. If it was a boycott of the court, then it would affect the court. This is a protest by lawyers who are marching in solidarity and to express their support for the independence of the judiciary, for the rule of law and the constitution of Kenya. Secondly, as advocates, we are going to publicly reaffirm our oath. We took an oath to defend the constitution of Kenya. We took an oath to defend the rule of law and the administration of justice. And we took an oath to defend the independence of the judiciary.
Now, Mr. Theory, critics of the judiciary are saying that perhaps the president's pronouncement should be an introspection call for the judiciary to look at itself holistically, because they said President Ruto is not the only person in Kenya who has expressed such similar sentiment. Your take?
We would want to say that even as the Law Society, we have our concerns about the levels of corruption within the judiciary. And whereas we may have those concerns, what we are seeing is not an attempt to deal with the question of corruption or inefficiency within the judiciary. What we are seeing is an attempt, because the judiciary has had issues or is in a process where it continuously needs to engage in measures to reduce corruption, that then corruption becomes an easy excuse to deal with. The other thing, and this is what is also what we would then find interesting, is that the government in itself has not demonstrated any commitment to fight corruption within itself. So why is it that the judiciary then becomes the punching bag when it comes to the question of corruption? That is where the mischief is, and we can see what the executive wants. And then the other question is, why is it that it is only after the executive has lost in court on the question of the housing fund, on and the courts have talked to the National Health Insurance Scheme, that the judiciary is now suddenly corrupt?
Eric Theory is the president of the Law Society of Kenya. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. The African Union has joined the United States in appealing for calm in the Horn of Africa. This after regional tensions soared following a contested deal between Ethiopia and the breakaway region of Somaliland. Somalia has vowed to defend its territory after Monday's agreement. Mogadishu described it as an aggression and a blatant assault on its sovereignty by neighboring Ethiopia. The memorandum of understanding gives landlocked Ethiopia access to the Red Sea through Somaliland. The French news agency AFP says a statement issued by the AU Commission chair calls for calm and mutual respect to de-escalate the simmering tension between Ethiopia and Somalia. For analysis, I reach Matthew Bryden. He is the co-founder and strategic advisor at the Sahan Research Think Tank.
Well, I think this is the default position of the international community. The United Nations and the African Union are based on respect for the territorial integrity and sovereignty of states. So I wouldn't expect anything else at this stage from other governments. That said, the recognition of states under international law is essentially a political decision. And if Ethiopia is serious about implementing this agreement and proceeds with full recognition of Somaliland, and there is the possibility that other states would follow suit, then this will become essentially a political decision within the international community. So I think what we need to do is, the memorandum of understanding comes with a sort of month-long implementation pause, as it's been described by the two parties, and I think we need to wait 1 month to see whether the two parties are really serious about its implementation.
But Matt, the announcement seemed to have ruffled a few feathers, particularly in Somalia and in the Horn of Africa region.
Well, I think what we're seeing is a lot of testing of the waters on the Ethiopian side. Ethiopia has, in some public statements, walked back its commitment to full recognition of Somaliland, suggesting that this is something it is considering, but that it's not at this stage decided to fully embrace. On the Somali side, unofficially at least, from pundits and members of parliament claiming to speak on behalf of the government, what I think we see is a lot of interpretation of very bland international statements as somehow validating Somalia's position, when that's not really the case. What we're seeing, statements from the European Union and United States that are simply in line with standard international practice, and they are not expressing indignation or condemnation of Ethiopia's actions. They're simply reaffirming a well-established tradition in the international system.
Some are suggesting that Somaliland, after many attempts of trying to convince the international community for recognition, seem to have brought this new deal in front of the international community, which they said appears to be a diplomatic masterstroke for them. Some differ. What say you?
Well, in some ways, I think this moment was inevitable. First of all, Somaliland has been a de facto independent polity for over 30 years. And at some stage, of course, members of the international community and other governments were bound to sit up and take notice and to consider the benefits of politically and diplomatically engaging with Somaliland. And there is a long history of foreign governments signing agreements with Somaliland. Some have diplomatic offices in the capital, Hargeisa. So over time, I think Somaliland's aspirations were likely to come closer to being realized. The second point is that Somaliland, at least since the fall of the Somali government in 1991, has become de facto a partner of Ethiopia rather than of Somalia and Mogadishu. Its trade is with Ethiopia, its security is with Ethiopia, and politically it shares more in common with Addis Ababa than it does with Mogadishu. So there's a natural partnership there that seems to be coming to fruition after decades of de facto relations. Well, and then third, I mean, Somaliland and Somalia have been engaged in talks for more than a decade, since 2012, and Somalia has not respected any of the previous agreements and has not shown any desire to entertain Somaliland's political objectives. So in a sense, this is a crisis that Mogadishu has brought on itself by not seriously engaging with Somaliland on its political aspirations and its final status. Somaliland was bound to pursue a unilateral path towards recognition.
Matthew Bryden is the co-founder and strategic advisor at the Sahan Research Think Tank. He spoke with me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi. In Senegal, the opposition Pastef Les Patriotes is expressing disappointment over the Supreme Court's decision not to dismiss the libel conviction of its leader Ousmane Sonko. It says it nevertheless plans to compete in the coming February 25th general election. This, despite legal and political observers who say the court's ruling effectively bars Sonko from contesting as a presidential candidate in next month's general election. Sonko had appealed his libel conviction for defaming tourism Minister Mame Mbaye Niang. His supporters say the ruling and conviction are politically motivated to prevent Sonko from competing in the elections. For more reaction from the party and its next line of action, I reach Usainu Lee. He is a spokesperson for the opposition party.
The party is truly disappointed to see the Supreme Court so quickly wrap up this case for judgment, while other cases have been well underway for months or years. Also, our party is disappointed to see that the Supreme Court has ignored his own law in handing down this verdict in a context where the Constitutional Court is reviewing our application. The court has not taken any steps with this decision. The court has not taken any steps to strengthen our role of law or to bring justice closer to the people. Yeah, we can consider that this verdict is a result of a race against time to do all things to prevent Mr. Sonko from running to this election.
Hussein, what does it mean for the party, and will the party choose another candidate since you said that the ruling means that he might not participate in the elections?
Yeah. Even we are facing this kind of situation that, as I speak, Mr. Sonko remain our candidate to this election, even we face this kind of situation, because we decide to fight, we decide to give all our best to maintain him as our candidate for this election. As I said, we will do everything we can do to have him in the starting line for this election.
Does that mean that there's a legal path for Sonko to contest as a presidential candidate in the February presidential election in spite of the ruling on Friday?
Yeah. Today we are Friday, so the Constitutional Court will review his applications for the election. And despite the lawsuit against him, there has not yet been a final decision to roll him out of this competition. So he is still, he gets still his rights, his civic and democratic rights to participate in this election. From now on, we submitted to the Constitutional Court a complete application form. Every document they request, we submit it. So we don't see anywhere or how they can invalidate our candidates, because we have all the document they request. And Mr. Sonko, even there is a even yesterday decision, he can still apply for this election.
If the Constitutional Court says he's not qualified, then what happens to your party and the effort to have him as a presidential candidate?
Yeah, let's see what they will decide today. So we think that if they are interested by the law, only by the law, not considering other political issues, so they will declare Mr. Sonko a candidate. And in any situation, of course, we will attend, we will participate in this election, of course.
Hussein Uli is a spokesperson for the opposition party, PASTEF Le Patriot. He spoke with me from the Senegalese capital, Dakar. And you are listening to Nightline Africa on the English to Africa service of The Voice of America. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. And coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, the Saturday music spot from our collection of music from the continent. But first, in Sierra Leone, the executive director of Campaign for Human Rights and Development says there's mixed reaction to the charges against former President Enes Bai Koroma over his alleged role in the November coup attempt. Abdul Fatoma says his organization supports calls to ensure that all Sierra Leoneans are treated equally before the law, irrespective of their political affiliation or societal status. His comments come after the former president was officially charged and granted bail for his alleged role in the failed coup. It also comes as a letter emerged from ECOWAS highlighting an agreement between Sierra Leone and Nigeria about plans to temporarily relocate the former president to Nigeria. Local media quoted officials as denying some of the contents of the letter. For more reaction, I reach Abdul Fatoma.
We have mixed reaction from the public. It depends who you're listening to or from what region, or that's how the country is now. So people actually from the northern region see it as a disrespect, you know, to the former president for him to be indicted and charged to court, you know, and that is what some of the people are saying, not all of the people, but most of the president loyalists, the former president loyalists, and that is what they are thinking and that is what they are saying on social media. And you have other set of citizens that says, if the government have the evidence to support the claim that the former president was directly involved, as alleged, you know, in the November 26th failed coup attempt, then, you know, he must be accountable.
Let's talk about the ECOWAS letter, because what it appears to be trending in Sierra Leone is an ECOWAS letter that is suggesting a way forward or a path to resolving supposedly the tension as a result of former President Ernest Bai Koroma being charged. How are people reacting to this in Sierra Leone?
The government having a disagreement and lack of confidence in the ECOWAS approach, because government officials, their government officials are saying, you know, that was not part of the closed door meeting they have with the ECOWAS, you know, because the letter requesting that the president should approve that the former president should travel to Nigeria and his pensions will be paid, his medical bills will be taken care of, his property in Sierra Leone will be protected, you know, by state security, and his entitlement as a former president should be accordingly given to him while he's on exile on temporary leave. So it brings a lot of, you know, outrage, you know, among Sierra Leoneans. Some Sierra Leoneans take it like ECOWAS has been disrespectful to the sovereignty of Sierra Leone. And the foreign minister said in a public interview that he doesn't countenance the content of the ECOWAS letter, but it is true that his ministry have received a correspondence, you know, from ECOWAS, but they do not countenance, you know, the content of that letter. So it brings a whole disagreement between the ECOWAS commission and that of the governor of Sierra Leone.
Some analysts that I have spoken with appear to say that nobody is above the law. And if anybody is accused or there's evidence against somebody who is allegedly involved in disturbing public peace and stability, that person must be dealt with in accordance with the full force of the law in Sierra Leone. What are people saying about this?
Majority of the Sierra Leonean populace subscribes to that. And the president has been assuring the people of this country, you know, that the process will go through the due process of the law and the rule of law will be respected. And we as an organization, we also believe a strong and legitimate, you know, rule of law system, you know, protect the human rights of people, you know, and holding, you know, power accountable and prevent violent crime, you know, prevent fear and legitimate venue to resolve conflict in society. You know, these are strong elements that actually prepare good democracy. The U.S. government, you know, the ambassador here have spoken lately about that the U.S. government in Washington is interested in things really moving forward. And whosoever is liable or, you know, get involved, the fact that the government have evidence, those people should be held to account. And so international community giving their support with regards to that, and, you know, citizens are also giving their support, that people who were responsible for the November 26th incident should be held accountable.
Abdul Fatoma is the Executive Director of Campaign for Human Rights and Development. He spoke with me from the Sierra Leonean capital, Freetown. In Ghana, the Alliance for Social Equity and Public Accountability, or ASEPA, is calling for the resignation or firing of Kwesi Nkweni-Mbosompem, the Controller and Accountant General, over his decision to engage in political activities. This, the civil society group says, contravenes the constitution, since Kwesi Nkweni-Mbosompem remains a civil servant. It comes after Kwesi Nkweni-Mbosompem declared his intention to compete in the primaries for parliamentary aspirants in the governing New Patriotic Party, or NPP. The NPP is scheduled to choose its parliamentary candidate on January 20, ahead of Ghana's next year general election. Mensa Thompson, the chief executive officer of ASEPA, tells me that his organization plans to take legal action against the government if the controller and accountant general does not resign or be fired on Monday.
The constitution makes it very clear that members who are serving an active service in either the civil service or the local government service cannot participate fully in political party activities. In fact, they cannot even contest on the ticket of a political party whilst in active service. And at any point in time, when they decide to do so, they must resign before they can actively take part in political party activities. The confusion in this particular matter was settled by the Supreme Court in 2017 in the case of Klosterk versus Attorney General, where the Supreme Court clearly set out the position of the law with respect to civil servants participating in politics.
Is this the reason why your organization is also calling on the Electoral Commission not to accept his application to contest as a parliamentary candidate for the ruling party?
In fact, per the law, once he resigns, he can contest. But we are saying that his continuous remain in office after filing to contest on a ticket of a political party undermines his eligibility under Article 94 of the Constitution. Because to become a member of parliament, one of the key eligibility criteria is that you must not have violated any laws of the land. And so he continued to remain in office after filing his nomination to contest as a member of parliament is what undermines his eligibility. It's on that basis that is why we're asking the EC that even if he is successful at the internal party primaries, in November, when he files his nomination to contest in the national elections, his nomination should be rejected on the basis of not meeting the eligibility criteria.
But what if he has tendered in his resignation and is going through the process? It has yet to get to the president to accept or deny the resignation?
Well, as we speak, we have not seen any resignation letter from him. Neither have we received any letter from the presidency saying that they have received a resignation letter from him and that they are considering it. So in the midst of that vacuum, the automatic presumption is that he has not resigned.
So are there any legal remedies to address this concern that you have?
Absolutely. And that's why we are planning to go to court. That by close of day on Monday, if we don't see any official letter of his resignation or a letter from the presidency revoking his appointment, we'll go to court.
What do you think the prospect of going to court is?
Well, it's a constitutional interpretation matter. And like I said, the Supreme Court, in the case of Klosterk versus Attorney General, has already set out the position of the law. So it's about going back to the Supreme Court to enforce the law. Because when it comes to enforcement of the law, the original jurisdiction is with the Supreme Court. You know, so the Supreme Court is clothed with the powers of enforcing the law. And so when, at any point in time, when any citizen believes that a law of the land is being violated, he has a prerogative to go to the Supreme Court for the Supreme Court to make a pronouncement on the matter. It's also a matter of constitutional interpretation on whether officers such as controlling accountant general, which is an office appointed by the president, you know, also falls under the prerogative of Section 4 of the PNDC Law 327.
What do you say to your critics who are of the view that this is yet another attempt by your organization to demonize and perhaps make the government unpopular?
I think for what it's worth, it's the government that is making itself unpopular. Because, like I said, assuming the government does not even respect our laws, assuming there is no even law, doesn't even common sense speak to these people that for certain specific independent state offices, especially independent state offices of accountability, such as controlling accountant general, auditor general, electoral commission chairperson, you cannot continue to occupy these offices and still overtly participate in political party activities. You know, so I think the matter that's all, you know, fraught with a number of questions, and there's no interest in making anybody unpopular. Rather, it's the government's action and inaction that's making itself unpopular.
Mensah Thompson is the chief executive officer of ASEPA. He spoke with me from the Ghanaian capital, Accra. And in Zambia, the opposition Citizens First Party plans to sue Graphael Musumba, the Inspector General of Police, over the ban on public rallies until the security situation improves. Harry Kalaba, the leader of the party, says the constitution guarantees freedom of assembly. He adds that anybody who thwarts that infringes on the fundamental rights of citizens. This after Musumba advised opposition parties to consider holding indoor rallies until insecurity concerns are addressed. But civil society and opposition groups, including the Citizens First Party, rejected the move, saying this is an attempt by the chief of police to crack down on rallies by opponents of the administration. They also questioned why the ruling party is allowed to hold public rallies but prevent the opposition from doing the same. For more about the plans to challenge the ban on such gatherings, I reach Harry Kalaba. He is the leader of the opposition Citizens First Party.
Mr. Musumba is speaking from a position that is not backed by the law. So what we have decided, our party, the Citizens First, together with another political party, the Economic Front, being supported by other opposition political parties, we are going to sue the Inspector General of Police in the Lusaka High Court so that he can show the court where he's drawing his authority from to stop asking the opposition from having a political rally.
But the Inspector General of Police expressed concern about the security situation in the country and that there is not enough or there will not be enough police officers to ensure the protection of your members when you go on such rallies. Isn't this his duty to enforce law and order and to protect Zambians?
No. It is not in his place as Inspector General of Police to determine whether a political party can have a rally or not, or whether the security situation is not allowing or not. It is not in its place. The Zambian constitution provides for us in the opposition, or indeed any other citizen, to notify the police when we want to have a gathering. It's notifying the police. And notification to the police cannot amount to getting a permit from the police. That is where the Inspector General of Police is missing it. Secondly, the Inspector General of Police does not have the authority, it doesn't have the mandate to determine whether a meeting should not take place on flimsy grounds that it doesn't have enough police, because he doesn't know when the Citizens First will want to hold a rally. He doesn't know when other political parties would want to have meetings. So where is he drawing his strength to say he does not have enough manpower? Just the other day, the president just woke up and was having a rally in Southern Province. Where did he get all the police to do that kind of protection? And in any case...
But he's the president of the Republic of Zambia. He's the president. So the police would have to ensure his protection.
Let the police protect the president if they so want. But we don't need the police to parade or to protect us as citizens. There is a provision that we can provide our own youth, our own people, to ensure that peace and tranquility prevails.
But the Inspector General of Police advised opposition political parties to hold gatherings not in public but in private until the security situation improves. What is wrong about
that? That is what we are refusing, because that is not his place. It is not for him to advise us to have the meeting in the indoors or not indoors. That is not his place. When did he know that there is a security situation in the country? Where is there a security situation in this country? Zambia is not at war with any country. Zambia is not having any militias in any part of the country. Where is he drawing this thing of saying that there is security concern in the country? There is nothing like that. All that Mr. Musumba is trying to do is trying to play partisan politics. He's trying to be the agent for the ruling party, the UPND. Will not allow it, and that's why we are dragging him to court.
But Mr. Musumba has attributed the volatile security situation in Zambia to what he says is the increasing number of junkies, whom he said the opposition political parties such as yours have been using to mobilize what some people are quoting him to say unnecessary public rallies. So why do you use junkies to disturb people's peace and tranquility and the country's political stability?
Mr. Musumba, the IG should tell us the definition of a junkie. He should tell us where we are getting those junkies from. He should tell us where he found those junkies. Because you just cannot wake up, issue such an inflammatory statement of saying opposition parties like ourselves are using junkies to organize our party. In any case, the levels of poverty that Zambia is going through is turning almost everybody into a junkie, because there's too much poverty. And even anybody who is not on drugs or who is not on heavy alcohol will be looking like they are on heavy alcohol and on heavy drugs because of hunger. So Mr. Msamba does not have a barometer. He does not have any measuring instrument to tell us who is a junkie and who is not a junkie. And that is why I said earlier, it is not in its place. And the courts of law will determine whether Mr. Msamba's statement is legitimate or not. We are taking him on.
Harry Kalaba is the leader of the opposition Citizens First Party. He spoke with me from the Zambian capital, Lusaka. And right now it's time for music from our African collection. Côté, Gunther, à Bécoté.
mots. Elle est temps comme un fleuve, il ne retourne jamais à sa source. Hey, hey. Et moi je suis comme le temps. Bébé nanana na kraka yo na kozonga na mes étoiles, mon amour pour toujours. Bébé, 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 bébé.
Vitamine à l'envers, nana yo zawapi. Bébé, mon amour, tu me manques trop. Poli moi conni l'okola, moi noya béni, quoi j'en fous. Azoluka, azonga la santé na ye, mon bébé, mon bébé.
La
sa job na so souffrir na la mona yo anga chinga ta wisie esenga motali bo sona buki mi be kwa bolingo mon bébé bébé
sinon ni m'amore is a love bébé on la wisinga koleka paka leon o san fulinga sans ma babou bébé mon amour mon bébé.
Professeur Dr. René Kanzana Canada.
Ce qui est au qui va me si cher, qui n'a pas de mal. N'a pas de mal, n'a pas de faveur, tout le monde a de mal. Couple la pisse en décoré, ça n'a pas de distance.
And that was music from the continent. We hope you enjoyed it. Nightline Africa comes to you on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. And from the rest of the Nightline team, including producer Douglas Impuga and engineer Al Santos, we say a big thank you for joining us tonight. And remember, as the elders say, a fool is a wise man's ladder. I'm your host, Peter Clote, in Washington, D.C. Good evening, Africa.
Se comprendre. Dans l'homme, l'amour de ma vie, à ta puissance agonie, na l'île du son. Et que ça qui t'est chéri, banda konyo soit bolino. Dans l'homme pour le meilleur et le pire. Maman, pour le meilleur et le pire.
Claudicia,
à ta kobolino et wemeli, bana bakoli. Si bolingo na yo na mote manangeza kaka ya sikaye kolela te kobanga te seskula loba.